And we are recording again. All right. Hey, what up, everybody? Welcome to Mind Your Hive's Beekeeping. This is the B-side. As always, I'm your host, Greg Lehman. I'm joined with my beautiful... Joined by my beautiful wife, Kara Jo. What up, what up?
Hello, hello.
And this time we're talking to our buddy, Tom Pearsall. Tom is a farmer with Everwild Farms in... Horsham? Is it Horsham, Pennsylvania?
Oh, no. It is Amber.
It's Amber.
Oh, it's Amber.
It might not be proper.
Historic.
Horsham Township, Ambler, Pennsylvania. But what's up, Tom?
What's up, yo?
Welcome, welcome.
How's it going?
Oh, studio audience giving you so much love right now.
Hey, guys.
Guys, seriously, stop it, guys.
Seriously. Keep it coming.
Okay,
stop.
Okay, guys, calm down.
We got a conversation to get
to. Okay.
Oh, that's
nice. Oh, don't give me a sound pad. But so this is the second of these B-sides that we've done. We did the previous one with our buddy Mike Landers about cocktails. And there's so much crossover with beekeeping and farming.
Mm.
Duh.
And also just like the ideology of how we approach beekeeping and how you guys approach farming.
Mm-hmm.
But Kara came up with this idea when you were on that Zoom presentation.
That we'll talk about later, but I have been...
Oh, snap.
...working at Everwild Farm this summer, spending time there.
Yeah.
Kara, the intern.
Yes.
Yeah, Kara, the intern.
Which has been awesome.
I like that it was like, I'm going to volunteer, and then she was like, I'm interning.
Well, yes. I was like, can I just put on my resume as intern?
Yeah.
Tim was like, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you were there for a full day once a week.
Yeah. And legitimately,
I think it was like 12 times or something like that.
Yeah, it was a bunch.
I always talk about like getting your hands in soil is so good for you. It's so good for like your mind, your mind, body, everything. And Kara would be like the happiest of the week when she was in that soil, even though you guys just had her doing all the weeding and
not always. Well, I did all kinds of stuff.
There's not a lot of it's funny, beekeeping is glamorous in a way, but farming people think is glamorous, but it's just this hard work.
Greg would be like, you're doing the bitch work. I'm like, all of farming is
bitch work. Well, it's like brewing is cleaning stuff,
right?
You know, the yeast does the brewing, brewers clean,
right?
Farmers, you create soil, and not even create soil, but you know, you
we'll talk about
amend soil, but
just soil management.
We brought you guys into the hives today.
Yeah.
Now, had you ever
been beekeeping before?
Never.
Okay.
I've seen hives. I've seen a hive open before.
We had a hive on we caught a swarm on your property.
Right.
And you guys, for a little bit, had like this little mini funny hive.
A little cute. It was so cute.
That was hilarious. But
it was very diseased and ended up not making it through the winter. But
yeah, that was a good learning lesson.
I learned so much about disease from that hive. Like they were riddled with disease. So yeah, were you scared? Like what, before you were put on the suit, how were you feeling?
So excited.
You are.
Yeah, I saw there's two
giddy
suits.
Boy.
I'm so giddy. So I saw two suits just hanging up and I didn't know what we were getting into. Like I was like, yeah, we're going to go talk about and check out the hives, but I didn't know we're actually going in and you're like giving me some gloves and you're giving me the tool to start prying open some boxes. And I was like, okay, we're doing this.
What was it like for you, that experience? Like anything particular stuck out? You kind of saw the gambit of just basic beekeeping stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean,
you saw a baby bee be born.
That was...
Or an adult bee.
I never really know... Breathtaking. Simply
seriously,
breathtaking.
It was. It was incredible.
Elaine from Seinfeld or whatever that episode was. Breathtaking. I always wonder... We've had so many folks in hives where I just go like, okay, and I just kind of open a hive up and I'm looking for interesting frames to then just hand you and go, this is what I'm looking at. This is what you're seeing right now. But like, is that the move?
Yeah, definitely.
And I feel like seeing a bee emerge...
It's always fun.
It was incredible.
It's like, happy birthday.
Yeah, literally. Like, and it was like fun because it like poked its head out a little bit and I was like, nah, I'm not coming out. And then it came all the way out and I was like, oh God, it was so cool. I did not expect, I just didn't know what to expect. I had no expectations. Like I wasn't, I don't know. I know some people are scared of bees, but like.
I mean, you're all suited up and.
Yeah.
Well, also,
but even if not, I just like, it's just like, I don't know.
You're a farmer. Like even when we were walking out, I was like, Tom's fine. Yeah. Like he's not
going
to be.
I'm going unsuited.
Go on naked.
Of course, I was the only one that got stung.
Yeah, of classic. Course.
We also saw a weird queen situation. You guys were holding the frame and the queen just fell off.
That's right.
And then Greg went and picked it up and she kind of rolled on the frame in the hive. She rolls on her back mm-hmm. and kind of starts seizing. And we were like, is she fainting?
We've had queens faint before. That's something that queens will do.
I saw her shoot out an egg when she fainted that one time too. That was kind of cool. So wild. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Literally. Yeah. Just like
oh, she lost
control of her whatever, shot an egg out, oh and then was we God. Thought she was dead.
And then this she queen, was not
dead. I have like, her marked as the fainter. Her name in our notes is the fainter.
And she's fine.
Oh yeah, she's yeah. great.
That's cool.
Prolific queen.
Greg sat there like because we'd never seen a fainting queen before, and uh-huh. Greg sat there for like 20 minutes with her, like next to the thing. I was like, all right, I'm gonna go back to work. He's like, I'm sitting here. I think.
And then she came back to
yeah.
life.
Yeah, luckily you knew what a fainting queen was because I didn't.
I had like faintly heard of it, like I just. But well, yeah, like I mean, I don't know what's that. I kind of remember when we first got bees, but also we were not in protective gear. Like,
oh, yeah,
Karen and I, you did it with just a hat on when we first started.
That sounds scary.
I felt like I had
a suit of armor on.
Yeah,
like
well,
I was like I was nothing. The only thing I was concerned about is I had no socks on, and I thought. I could get stung on the top of my foot, and that yeah. was about it.
Well, also, I think that that's, and I've talked about this before on here, but a big part of beekeeping, like when you can really get in the groove and become a good beekeeper, is when you don't have fear anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because the fear gets in the way of everything that you're thinking about.
Right.
And then once you get past that, I remember being like, oh, I can, like, I everything made sense to me yeah. then. Because I wasn't just scared.
Your brain's like jumbled with this fear thing.
Yeah.
And you're not, but you take that away, all of a sudden you have all this more capacity to be looking at the bees
yeah,
better and be more present. Happening.
It's like, it's dearthy. With
the fear. We taught Tom a term, the dearth.
He likes it.
Super into. I see. Funny you say I love it. I'm like, I hate it.
But for farming, I feel like you guys have a dearth too.
We're in right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're in dearth right now.
Yeah, like the high.
I mean, irrigation is running as soon as I get into the farm until the end of the day. We turn it off. It's just like moving water around all day long.
Yeah, it's been nuts.
That's what I'm saying. It's like the 10th. Like, I was reading. It's like the 10th driest. July into August in like the last like 150 years.
It terrifies me. I'm scared by it.
We got to do a rain dance or something.
I'm in on that.
Yeah.
It's supposed to rain tonight and God, we need it so bad.
That storm cloud was looking a little scary.
And I know, but it kind of looks
scary,
gone.
But
I know it's not there. Yeah. So,
but anyway, dearthy. It was looking so like you were just talking about like feeling like you are open and being able to like notice things, but like that's you're in flow. Like you were saying, like the bees are in flow, you know, early spring when things are going, like that's flow. But I was like, you're like in dearth when you're feeling scared, so you're not going to notice
blocked
things.
Up.
That is deep, like, Tom.
Super deep.
I like that. Oh, yeah. I flow like
state,
that a lot.
Dearth
flow,
state. Total flow yeah. there. Yeah.
Well, there never really was an opposite to flow state. Now we have it.
Total dearth state.
That's good.
Now you're going to like dearth again.
Yeah.
Come
yeah.
on.
I'm going to come home and be like, I'm feeling dearthy. I need some time.
Yeah.
I need some help. Yeah. I need some support.
I need to
feeling
go.
Dearthy.
I just need to go for
oh, you're feeling dry?
Don't be crude, okay? Okay, all right. So this whole thing came up. I think this is a good time to talk about this.
Why we were like, we should bring Thom. And you'll hear me call him Thom just because we have so many Toms in our life.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom is one of those T-H-O-Ms.
What's up?
So he's Thom. His brother, Tim, we actually call him Thim as well because we have a
Thom
number of Tims in our life. So if you hear me say Thom, that's just, you know, my cute pet name for Tom. I'll literally say to Kara, I'll be like, oh, I was talking to Tom today, and she'll go, who? I'm like, Tom.
I'm like, who's this Tom person that you're talking about?
Who are you talking about?
Which Tom?
What Tom are you talking
Which
to?
Tom?
Yeah.
Is it Thom? Because say Thom. Anyway, so you did a regenerative farming Zoom meeting. I remember it was like random. I saw it mm-hmm. last second. I was like, oh, I want to go see what this is all about.
Yeah.
Was that a series that Temple did? It was. What was the...
So, I don't know like how that... like. So this kid who is, I think, a senior at Temple just, like, reached out to us, like, last year and was like, hey, I'm working with this program. Like, can we bring kids out to the farm and, like, go check out, like, some, like... It was like a camp. Like,
ain't nobody got time for that.
Well, and it wasn't... Like, I would have loved that. But we just, you know, we can't do
property
that.
Owners.
Yeah, yeah, property
right,
owners.
Right.
Yeah. But so then he re-reached out to us and was like, what, like, hey, we're thinking, and like, we're with this club. It's called like Defend Our Future or something like that. So it's like a bunch of like college kids just like trying to figure out what they're doing for climate resilience and stuff like that. So they reached out to us and was like, hey, do you guys want to talk about regenerative farming? Because it's now like becoming more of a buzz term, regenerative farming. Like people are starting to know about it.
So I hadn't heard of it.
Yeah. It's like, it's old, but it's new.
So it's interesting because beekeeping doesn't have any real terms. Mm-hmm. So there's no standards for beekeeping in the United States. So it's not, you really can't call yourself an organic beekeeper. Some people try to say their honey's organic, and literally I think that's their way of saying like they own a 3-mile radius around their hives, but like that's not something that exists, especially on the East Coast.
Right.
We say that we use organic standards in how we beekeep.
Nice.
And Europe has that, like where they'll say it. And then there's some groups that are trying to do a lot of studies, and they'll say conventional or organic beekeeping. So we'll constantly say we do use organic standards, but farming, I mean, organic, biodynamic, conventional, regenerative. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's 40 other terms.
Right.
Yeah. So this talk I thought was really good because it reinforced, it taught me stuff, but it also mm-hmm. reinforced, it made me realize that I was doing some regenerative practices that I didn't even realize.
Right.
Because you're looking out for nature while you're beekeeping, while you're farming, and that is really the kind of the whole thing of
like
what regenerative is,
right? Approach.
That's
so yes, tell us what
that's the essence is. It's like, yeah, it's like it's a holistic mindset when you're farming. Like,
so do you have chickens? All, granted, you get eggs and you can sell eggs, but yeah. Also like the chickens are a part of this thing with their poop going in the compost, right. And them getting scraps and right. Like. It's more than just you're getting eggs.
Exactly.
It's a part of this thing.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just like, so the thing, like, and part of the reason why you haven't probably even heard about it is because like there's not like a definition for like regenerative.
Nobody's charging money to put a certification that says regenerative.
Well, Rodale now
is
actually
regenerative.
So Rodale like is they are claiming to have coined the term regenerative farming.
I didn't realize they're so close to us.
So close.
Yeah,
and
we're
like
in their
global
backyard.
Leaders.
Yeah,
wait, where are they? Because we
Kutztown.
Okay.
Yeah, because I all the time read Rodale books. Yep. They certify seeds. I mean, there's a whole thing. And with beekeeping, they're a huge part of beekeeping with this organic push to beekeep. But yeah, they're in our backyard. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah,
okay,
that's
so
close.
let's get a baseline idea of what regenerative farming is.
So, okay, so I will tell you what I just tell my customers at like the farmer's market, because
sales pitch
elevator pitch
pitch
is that the pitch thing? Me
is that the right
pitch me
thumb
pitch?
So because our sign says Everwild Farm, has our little cute logo, and then it says small scale regenerative, and so everyone's like, what does that mean? Because like there's only two farms at the market. One is very conventional, and then there's us. And so
do you get more business?
I don't know.
Okay.
Like I'm we're too busy to
your
really
head
notice.
Is down the whole time
there,
right?
Yeah. That means yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway,
but like there's a lot of people. There's like, you know, several hundred customers, you know, every market, like 500-600 customers a market.
Yeah, I'm just wondering like where people are drawn.
I'd be curious
asked.
If people go like look at prices.
That definitely is
that
the
is
case.
A thing
of
that
course.
Has, sure.
And it, yeah. certain people
ours
that's,
is more.
Yeah.
It should be
sure.
Absolutely.
Like, you know,
our
like,
honey should be more than the plastic bear honey that
right.
comes from insert country here.
Classic.
That's sitting at the grocery store.
Right.
Yeah. Should
okay.
Be the
regenerative
same.
Farming.
So, yeah. So like, if someone's like, "What is this? Like, can you tell me what? I don't even know what that is." And
you're
so,
like, "Pull up a chair. I have
like, yeah,
a
listen,
lecture to give
yeah,
you."
Yeah. Well, I would love to, because that's what you know. That's the thing is like, you know, there is just so there's regenerative farming is so broad, but like basically like the technical term is like. It doesn't actually have a definition, but it would be like a series of tools that help improve soil health and ecosystems.
All comes back down
farm.
To the soil.
Exactly.
Yep. And like bringing, just from my understanding of being with you guys this summer, like bringing life back to the soil. Because your brother was talking about how
looking
into just becoming certified organic and how so many certified organic farms... They're organic, but they've dead soil.
Exactly.
Can we just talk about the fact that it's you have to pay this crazy amount of money to become organic,
I know.
But you don't have to pay anything to just use crap
You don't have to say.
You don't have to label it. You don't have to. But in order to tell people that you're being as safe as possible, you have to pay extra money, and it's just so backwards. Yeah, seriously. Oh, it's so frustrating.
It is super.
You should have to. You should have to put on your vegetable. We use these chemicals that are carcinogenic and blah 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 blah. Right. And then you go like, oh yeah, we don't have any of that. Or here's a vegetable. It doesn't have labels.
Like, imagine like if a grocery store like had like warning labels on every single product. You couldn't go to the grocery store and not see it. It's like you would find this little tiny section, you know.
This is just a good conversation to help people like understand like what's happening at their farms, where their food is coming from. So that's my understanding of it, is like alive soil.
Yeah, yes. So how I help people to understand is like, okay, so we do organic growing, like we're not certified organic, but we participate in organic practices where we don't use GMOs, there's no GMO seeds, and we don't spray toxic chemicals.
Right. It's funny, you can't say chemicals because everything is a chemical, exactly. And then you get the people who are like, water's a chemical, and you're like, all right, dude, that's not what I mean.
Yeah, yeah, or so like then no say, like, synthetics, toxic chemicals, no synthetic chemicals, so it's like, you know, like we will spray stuff, but we spray like fish fertilizer. We spray boron, you know, so we spray these things on our plants to like keep them healthy. But so
more like borophil.
That was too perfect. But so, so like you will go to an organic farm and like there is no focus on actual health of soil. It's literally, they say, do not spray these things. Do not plant these seeds. And that's it. It's very
black and white.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, that's how you get to be organically certified.
Now, do those farmers have to every year bring in new soil?
Not necessarily.
Or they're just, their fruits and veggies aren't getting the nutrients. Well,
you use organic fertilizers. So you'll use.
Okay.
Like,
so they're just feeding. Yes. Okay. So they're not doing new soil, but they're doing a lot more fertilizers.
Exactly. So they're, you know, you have organic fertilizers and things like that. And this is a good point. I brought up the point before, like I want to touch back to the synthetic fertilizer and organic fertilizer. We're talking about like in the hives about the honey. And the moisture content. We can circle back to that later.
Oh, good call. Yeah. Yes. That was a cool conversation.
But the idea is that like what we'll do is like organic certification just tells you those are the basics. But like what the idea and the mindset of regenerative farming or biodynamic is like they're so synonymous. Regenerative and biodynamic are so, you know, interchangeable almost. Is that regenerative focuses on the health of the soil, you know, but that's really the main thing is that, and like, even for us, like we take it further and like we're focusing on the ecosystem above the soil and below the soil. So like we are adding compost, we're doing, you know, tons of organic fertilizers. We're adding, you know, feather meal and bone meal and biochar and all these things.
I remember like, asking Tim, like, what do you guys use? And he said, I was like, I've never heard of any of those things. They sound pretty cool.
Yeah. And there's such a long list of things that
like, I remember it's like chicken guano. Blood.
Yeah.
And
blood, the oh, blood, yeah. blood meal is yeah, like,
and blood
like
meal. Blood meal is like actually feathers. Blood.
Yeah, I was talking to Haley about it. And she's like, what is that? And I was like, no, it's literally blood.
And
like
dried blood. I was really happy to hear that they're using all parts of the chicken.
It's so good. Like using the feathers. Like you strip the feathers, you just grind it up. And like,
that's calcium.
It's so high in nitrogen. It's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah, it's super high in nitrogen. Yeah, it's also calcium. But so the idea is that doing all of these things to improve the health of soils, because like the soil is its own ecosystem. So like the idea of regenerative farming is like supporting that ecosystem to then allow that ecosystem to allow you to grow healthy plants.
So our friend Haley is sitting here. We only have three mics or else she'd be on, because she's done some she's done some really cool stuff with she actually went overseas and did this like slow food classes and just this
certification,
amazing,
right?
This amazing experience.
Masters.
She just held up a little sign that said monoculture, which is such a good point.
She's a contributor. She's a silent contributor.
But monoculture is such a good thing to say, because monoculture can go even deeper where the soil, you don't want to be a monoculture.
Exactly.
On top of the fact that you guys are planting wildflowers and just welcoming in pollinators on things that you're only growing for the sake of bringing in all this diversity that's going to help overall.
Right.
But like, even when you think about monoculture, Karen, I hate it when somebody's like,
I was going to just say this.
Go for it. Cause you
just get when people, fired up. Yeah. Just when people are like, this is
dandelion
honey. Orange blossom
honey,
or...
Yeah, like dandelion's not a good example. Orange blossom's a great...
Star thistle.
Yeah, like...
Blueberry blossom.
Yeah, yes. And it's either, well, that's bullshit and you're making that up. Because
yeah, it's not really...
Because, like, blueberries might be blooming, but there's so much stuff coming in. Or it's a monoculture,
right,
and you don't want that anyway.
And they're spraying and killing every other plant in that area and only letting almonds go or only letting whatever go.
Well, and the right problem with that with bees is there's certain amounts of amino acids in different pollens, mm-hmm, and they need all...
It would be like you or I only eating one thing and right expecting to get all the nutrients out of just one thing.
Well, and if the bees don't have all of the amino acids, then they might as well have none of them. Right. They can't complete the chain to like make the certain proteins right or whatever. So monocultures are like so bad for bees.
So people are like, oh, tell me about what type of honey. And I'm just like, we're never going to put we'll tell you a season, but we're never going to put anything on it. I know that, yes,
it's impossible.
You know, clover was really popping when we put the honey supers on for this specific hive. So, yes, it's going to be a lot of clover, but we're not in an environment that it's only clover. I'm not going to call it clover honey.
Right.
It's just, it's marketing that away from in life.
It's either marketing or monoculture.
Right.
Yeah. But that's like at the farm.
Mm-hmm.
Everwild Farms in Ambler, Pennsylvania.
Tim was showing me, like, there was like an American Beauty bush or something like that.
Oh, the Beauty Berry.
Beauty Berry?
Never heard of that.
So beautiful.
So we harvested elderberry, and Tom and Haley spent 3 hours like pulling elderberries.
So I'm working at the bar the other night at Forest and Main, and these three are literally sitting at the corner of the bar for like 3 hours just picking elderberries and putting them in jars.
Oh my God.
And we're doing a whole test on elderberry honey.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't have done without you guys. I'm like eternally grateful too.
I'm the one that should be grateful because I was going to have to do a bunch of work that you guys did. So I got out of it scot-free.
So you guys have these huge, gorgeous elderberry like bushes that I have just gained such appreciation for elderberry. Elderberry is cool. Like, you know what I mean? Everybody's like, elderberry, we love it. You know what I mean?
It's so hip right now.
Yes, it is so hip. But really just being in the presence of this plant is... Mm-hmm.
Yo, rattle off what elderberry does. Kara's in this legit program right now.
What you just texted me about it.
Elderberry tightens cell membranes so that viruses can't get in. And so they also...
Battens down the hatch of your cells.
And then they also interrupt replication in the nucleus of... So that the virus can't replicate.
So, you know, you hear the term immune boost and you're like, oh, elderberry is great for immune boost. But Kara's now learning like what that actually means on a cellular level.
Just wait. God. I'll drop some knowledge.
It's really rad. But yeah, elderberries are bad.
Yeah. So, okay. So this elderberry bush.
You can't eat them.
You cannot raw eat them. They're toxic. Although Tom was eating them.
I've been munching on them
and
for
so
years.
Is Tim.
He's a farmer.
Well, I ate one the other day because I was like, screw this. If you're eating it, I've always been like
I'm
so
fine
scared.
I think
I
you need to eat
one
like a lot.
Yeah,
you need to
seeds
eat like the bush word.
Yeah. Don't test it.
I wonder if that's guilty also why so many birds, like every bird has a crop that they're able to eat all these other things that then essentially ferment in their crop before...
Well, it shouldn't ferment. That's the thing.
Nutrients enter, but it gets broken down in their crop before entering their system. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's why they can eat these poisonous things.
Or it's just not poisonous to them for whatever reason.
All right, just shut me down. That's cool.
I don't know. I'm just giving other options.
I'm spitballing over here.
Okay, so elderberry, it was like a crop to harvest, right? But then... Like, you guys planted button bush. You planted those American Beauty things. And I said to Tim,
red
I was like,
beauty berries.
Yeah.
Beauty berry. They're so bright purple. It's like,
and, but,
oh my God.
And I said
amazing
to Tim, I'm like, oh, what is this good for? And he was like, just for pollinators.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not talking about the holistic thing. It's not just vegetables. Yep. It's, and something else I learned that I really liked this summer was when we, when you're, I guess, like, let's say lettuce, right? And there's little stumps of lettuce. If they're starting to rot, not pull them out, but push them in the soil, which feeds the microbes and helps
you're
keep it alive.
You're composting the soil, right?
Well, yeah,
you're,
yeah. Because like all of those microorganisms, like just like going back to the monoculture thing with the soil, is like all of the microorganisms feed on different parts of those root systems and that rotten, you know, veg and stuff. So like, Yeah, you're just refeeding, because like if you take that out and there's no root system, so say you take it out and the bed is bare with nothing in it, no like weeds, which is just like, you know, a plant you don't want there, but like there's no plant life in the beds, like they have nothing to eat.
Yeah.
So all of the fungi and protozoa and the bacteria and the worms and all these things that exist in the soil, this like ecosystem, like if it has nowhere to feed, nothing to feed on, it will just die, or yeah, it will migrate elsewhere and it'll just move out of that space. So then it's like, you know, because like you, when we have our beds, like we'll have a bed, you know, like they're not that far apart, like 2.5 feet wide. So like it might just move, you know, the things will just move, but like they might just die in that space. So there won't be anything available for it to be, you know, alive and active for the next plant to already be creating this relationship right off the bat. You know, as soon as you put a new transplant in, it should already have the boost from the microorganisms that already exist in the soil.
When I was building soil, so Karen and I lived in this, we had a little row home in Conshohocken, Pennsylvania, and we built these raised beds in the backyard, and we just were like, you know, we had no lawn, no, and nothing to grow, but we built this little thing and we were growing vegetables.
You built a bench in it. It was awesome.
It was awesome. I
love him.
Because it was raised beds, and I had put, for lack of a better word, like sterilized soil into it. Like it was nutrients in the soil, but it wasn't getting plant life. It wasn't getting leaves falling on it, and it wasn't getting decomposition really. I was actually every once in a while spraying a molasses mixture onto the soil to feed the microorganisms to get it more active.
That's cool.
And I like dove down that path of like, if you're not giving it, you know, this compost essentially, if you're not giving it whatever that would be called,
right,
you need to feed the things you can't see.
Right.
So then they're active and can do their job at providing nutrients. And it was just like, again, let's like go deeper.
Right.
Go deeper.
Essentially though, like when you're putting any fertilizer in the soil, you're not actually feeding the plant.
Right.
You're feeding what feeds on the plant roots, you know? So like
nuts.
You're giving all of this food for these microorganisms to create these relationships with the root systems of the plant so that the plant can then have it in a like form that they can actually uptake. So like a fungus will break down certain nutrients in the soil, like whatever it is, or like organic matter, and like it'll make it in a form that the plant can actually take through its roots, because they form these, you know, mycorrhizal relationship.
Don't get me started on mycelium.
That's
the soil internet, you know.
So yeah. And then does this have to do with cover crops? How does cover crops work in here?
Yeah, so in the beginning, regenerative farming is just like a series of tools to, you know, to a holistic approach to creating healthy soil. Like cover cropping, what that does is, number one,
what is cover cropping?
Cover crop, perfect.
Right, I mean,
perfect. So cover cropping is literally just like planting either a single species or a diverse amount of species on the soil to literally, the name is to cover the ground. It's a crop that covers. So it covers the soil.
So this will come out probably like mid-September.
Yeah,
or like right around September, a couple weeks.
When this podcast will come out,
which is a really good time to talk about cover crops.
Yeah.
So what are some things, so, like, does it matter? Or like?
So, it all depends. So like if
you use like winter pea.
Yep. Peas.
And rye.
Yep. So certain crops. So like they're, you know, grains like triticale, sorghum, all of these oats, peas, rye, vetch, clover. These are all like crops that people use as cover crops, because not only are they really prolific at growing really strong and really sturdy, their roots reach super duper deep. So they help break
up soils.
They're
bringing up nutrients.
Exactly.
Whoa.
So they're breaking up the soil. They're deep. They're digging deep. So they're creating like gaps for new organisms to enter into.
So the soil is not getting as compacted,
and the water can get down there.
Yeah, so they're helping like break down the soil, like break, like open up gaps so that water can penetrate deeper. Exactly. And then also helping to bring up more nutrients, especially with like,
I never thought of it as them bringing nutrients from below. That's pretty rad.
Exactly. So like certain things like clover, I think it's clover, and peas for definitely, or like our legumes.
Yes.
So they have nitrogen fixation in their root system. So they have like little nodules that like capture nitrogen. So then those help feed funguses in the soil. So they can break that down to make it a form that the plants can actually take up, because they can't, like, they fix nitrogen, but they can't just, like, use that. Plants can't just, like, use that nitrogen in a way. It, like, feeds bacteria that break that down in order for the plant to eventually take that up.
All right, so, like, somebody has a garden, yep. and, you know, tomato season comes to an end, and yep. they've got all this soil, and they've all right, they haven't ripped anything out.
No.
What do you suggest they would do in that circumstance?
So we're mid-September right now.
Okay? Yeah, okay.
So well, we're in mid-September, whatever, your end of the season, or it's October. It's still fine growing conditions. Well, number one, I would cut all of the plants at the soil line. So you leave
So you're not
the
ripping
roots.
Anything up?
No, I would not do that. Just okay. cut it at the base so that the roots are in the soil so that those will decompose and feed the decomposing organisms in the soil because they just continually need food. You can plant a cover crop. I mean, depending on how big your garden is, you know, like you can plant like a cover crop, like what we use is like oats and peas in the later fall time because they will die over the winter time.
Yep.
So like when they call it winter kill. But like not all farms use those kinds of cover crops. A lot of people use like longer term cover crops that like, you know, like say ryegrass or, you know, triticale or whatever you may use.
And then they're going to like cover that eventually?
Those will eventually like, so they don't die in the wintertime. So they just go dormant. So they might like just like the ryegrass might grow and it might be like 1 foot or 2 feet tall. And it won't die. It'll just stay there. And then eventually in the springtime, it will regrow and continue to grow back. So what you can do is you can mow it down at that point, and depending on the crop, because some are just like so much stronger than others and so much more prolific at growing. So like you either have to cut it and tarp it, or sometimes they can just die if you like crimp them, which is just like kind of like roll over them and just like knock them down. And then you can like either tarp that to kill that for the spring, like, oh, you know, early springtime, you can tarp it to like cook that green organic matter.
You give them you make it a little warm, they sprout, yep. then they get no sun, they
Boom,
die.
And you die.
But yeah. then it's all this organic matter.
Rich. It's a fucking weed.
I think tarping
man.
Is yeah. like a game changer,
it
right?
It is. I yeah. hate plastic, but it's such a game changer.
So
it's crazy.
Okay. So what if somebody has a raised bed in this situation? Like, is it still good to plant cover crops? Because you're still trying
be.
To feed. I get that
time,
it's different. Like, okay, so how is it? Talk about how that's different.
It's different because, like, depending on how high your beds are, you know, like, and I'm only speaking just, like, from what I understand about non-bed growing. Like, I don't grow in raised beds like that. But, like, if someone has a raised garden bed, it would be, because it, cover crops are usually like done on such a large scale, it might not even necessarily be the best option, because you just really use a cover crop to keep the soil covered so that you don't experience erosion and like nutrients don't leach out of your soil is really the main point of cover cropping, is to keep it covered so that you're feeding the organisms and the ecosystem in the soil and that you're not losing so many nutrients. And because like what happens is like if you leave it bare and it rains over and over and over again, like you're just losing
compaction, erosion.
Yeah, exactly.
Erosion.
It just erodes,
yeah.
and you just like lose all of that Got living it. Soil. You lose all
yeah,
of
those runoff
nutrients.
Is running
okay,
off nutrients
that's good.
Too.
Yeah.
Just,
yeah. We want to. I really, especially after the summer, like I really want to transition from raised beds to planting in the soil.
But even if you do raise beds, like I would just cover it with leaf matter. Like just keep it covered so that like. The rain just doesn't take away the soil.
It's not leaching everything
exactly.
out. So you keep the roots in and cover it up.
Yeah, I would. That would be just my suggestion.
Okay.
Like keep it. Or like, you know, people do this. It's like you cover it with cardboard, and like when you make like a lasagna bed, you yep. like use, you know, straw. You even cover it with straw, whatever you have. If you're a
grass, would grass work?
Grass that, clippings, yeah.
Although, are there seeds in that? And then there's grass growing in your
well,
bed.
If you got, know. Well, yeah, I guess it depend. You know, if like certain straws and like hays have a lot of seeds in them, so.
So you want to be careful.
Yeah, it all depends on what you want to do. But like yeah. leaf matter is going to be, especially in the fall time, because like leaf, you know, everything.
We had really good luck with leaf matter. And then I would tarp in like March
yep.
and just make sure I killed off any weed seeds.
Mm-hmm.
And then, man, I used to joke. I'd be like, Tom, it just feels so good in my hands. The soil is just so good. And you'd be like, dude, isn't it the best when soil is so good? And I'm
oh,
like,
God.
I can't believe we're nerding out right now about like
dude.
Hand feel of soil.
It's the best, man. It's the best. Like getting your fingers in the earth is just like the most like cathartic thing you could ever imagine.
Well, it's, I mean, we were into gardening and like you know, very, very small scale farming. And we had a goal previously. We would try to grow all the vegetables that we canned that we could then use in the wintertime. And then we had a CSA with a local farm, and that was the veggies. Those were the veggies we were eating when we got them. And it, I mean, it was just a nonstop battle. But
because we lived in a flood zone.
Yeah, it was a whole, exactly. Which
beautiful flood zone.
Our place here, it's like, oh my God, this is so much easier to grow. Yeah. We've been like, this has been so much harder until now. But then we got into beekeeping around the same time that we were really diving into this. And it was really cool how beekeeping just put us in touch with just all the other things going on in nature. And it just like really was that whole full scale just ecosystem viewpoint of nature and farming and beekeeping and just, man, talking about just things I never thought I would think about.
It gets really you in touch. It gets you in touch. Okay, one, I'm done my beer. Are we ready for the cool ship?
I was thinking what? I could definitely go for another.
Yes, let's do it.
All right, so we thought we'd crack a special one. So this is Forest & Main's first cool ship beer. So this was, Tom also works at Forest & Main. Or yes, will again, I when I'm hopefully
seasonal.
In the off season.
I'm a seasonal guy.
But a cool ship is, and just makes sense. We're talking about all these bioorganisms and creating ecosystems. Cool ship is you take the sugary liquid called wort that brewers make. So they extract the sugar out of grain, and then you add hops to it. And then typically you would introduce yeast in. With a cool ship beer, you take that hot liquid and you put it in this very big vat. It's like a 8 feet wide by 20 feet long, and you have a couple inches of the liquid, and it picks up the yeast and bacteria from the air. And you let that happen while the liquid cools, and then you take it, you put it in a barrel. That literally happened probably January of 2020. We put it in a barrel. It sat in that barrel until January of 2021, at which point we bottled it, and then it was in a bottle up until about a month ago. So it's a nice 2+ year beer. But it's all about the environment it's in and picking up these organisms out of the air and then it turning it into this really rad liquid, which just makes sense talking to a farmer. Mm. And again, I think there's a farmer's, it's about soil. It's about microorganisms.
It's all about the microbes. It feels like all beer should be brewed this way.
I know, right?
I mean, at one point it was.
That's what I was going to say. Like that. The beginning of beer, how did beer happen? That's right. It, right?
And it was, but it didn't taste like this, you know?
Or did it?
Yeah,
I guess now we would know.
So
unless
one,
there's still some
the
barrels.
The Aztecs are just like making beautiful, just, cool ship.
Did you ever see those women that they chew?
Yep.
What is it that they chew? What is it? Haley knows. Good.
Okay. It's yucca.
Okay. And they chew it and then they spit it out. And that's like the fermentation process, right? And then it turns into alcohol, right?
It tastes terrible.
Okay.
But then
you've had
it. No, I haven't.
Oh, okay.
I've seen cooked, I think, it's cooked.
Okay.
The Netflix special. But so they it tastes terrible. And then they chew it, spit it out.
Over and over again.
Over and over again. And then when you eat it, it tastes amazing.
Oh,
apparently. I don't know.
So
I can't speak to my own experience.
So you're saying the women that are chewing it tastes terrible, but the end product is amazing.
Yeah. So, I mean, these poor women who are chewing it.
They're serious,
but,
too.
But, I mean, yeah, serious, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the saliva and everything.
So, wait, that links up with while we were beekeeping. Uh-huh. And I was showing Tom and Haley a frame that had nectar on it, and then on that same frame you could see the nectar and then you could see capped honey. Mm-hmm. And they were like, what is this? And I go, well, that's honey. So when the nectar gets knocked down to a moisture rate below 18%, the bees go, it's good, it's now honey. They cap it, and that's like the ultimate storage. And then we talked about how there's beekeepers that will take frames of nectar and they will extract that nectar and then test it and go, oh, it's at 22% moisture. All we need to do is knock it down to 18% and it's honey. So they'll put it in a room with a dehumidifier. They'll lower it to 18%. And then they think that's honey. Mm. Kara and I a little bit disagree that that's honey. We think it's not quite honey because
we've talked about this before.
Yeah,
in other
but because the episodes. The bees are constantly putting their own bacteria, they're constantly
their own spit.
Dipping their mouth
out.
In,
yeah.
And they're taking a little bit in, putting a little bit out, and they're putting these microorganisms in, and these chemical reactions are happening as the moisture lowers, And to us, that's honey. And the same thing's not happening in a room with a dehumidifier.
Right.
Which is just funny because the yucca chewers are just constantly introducing these enzymes and this bacteria until something awesome happens, right?
I think you could also argue like the intersection between regenerative agriculture and beekeeping, the way you guys beekeep, is the nutrient density. I mean, it's got to be higher when your bees are feeding off of like a diverse plant variety versus monoculture.
Oh yeah.
And then absolutely. Yeah, you have all these other elements like of the bee, you know, spit.
Well, and also that's interesting because not all plants, like I remember when you're during your speech, you were like, how can we grow the best tasting vegetables possible? Right. And this was like part of it.
Yeah.
And like not all vegetables and not all flowers are created equal. So if they are being fed by the soil, they're able to, because I mean, when we learn from bee scientists and stuff, like plants are not always giving off, and as climate change happens, like they're giving less nectar and it's less nutrient dense and all of these things. So feeding the soil that can feed the plant, that can feed the bees. Mm-hmm. And one way that I really related to, I was like, oh my God, we're doing this, is at our old spot, we had a tractor that we moved. So it was a flood zone. And when we first moved there, you would walk and it would just, the grass would just like slip away. Like you could, it was, there were no roots.
Yeah. The roots were so shallow.
And so,
and it was because people were just mowing it as short as possible.
Right.
Just and nobody stunting put the growth. Thought into
they were
it.
Definitely using and, BS chemicals.
And there was like, you know, the water was just coming through. Right. So we won, like we're just letting, and if you let grass grow, what's really growing is wildflowers and cool herbs and plants and all kinds of stuff that have different length roots that are reaching down and doing the whole thing that you were talking about before. Mm-hmm. Also, we were tractoring our chickens and moving them around the lawn, and we would move them and then like throw some cool seeds down, and just the lushness.
Right.
That happened just in the trail. You could see where the chickens were. And I was like, that's regenerative, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you're just feeding it. And then years later, we never, you didn't slip. It was thick. It's.
When we first moved into that property, we would always throw a party in the summer.
Yes.
And this is just where the cornhole setups were. So we'd have cornhole boards.
Or bear pong. If you guys don't know bear pong, it's very fun.
Bear? Take five, like B-E-A-R?
Yeah, they're huge buckets.
So 5-gallon Home Depot balls. Buckets with little soccer balls or like the little basketballs, whatever they had at the dollar store.
Bear pong?
Bear pong.
And you fill
and
with
then you
water.
Set it up like beer pong.
And it splashes and it's 20
feet away.
Yeah.
Actually, in quarantine, at one point, Kara's parents were like, we need to come over. And we're like, yo, man, you're old. We shouldn't be like... You know,
this
we
was
don't
like
want
beginning
to,
of quarantine. Yeah, like, yeah,
we don't know what's going on. We don't want to give you COVID, and they really wanted to come over. And I went, you know what? We'll hang out outside and we'll play bear pong. And I'll just put a little soapy water in the
used.
Buckets. So there, we were just constantly getting covered in soap while we played this sort of drinking game. Thought it was brilliant, for the record.
So, but we would play those lawn games at this party,
and where the people stood just for a few hours.
Mud, just toast.
Of course.
And then over the years, I remember being like, would you look at that? The next day would bounce right back. You wouldn't even know that people were standing in the same spot for 6 hours. Like, it was like, the chickens did work. Right. Like, well done.
Right.
Yeah, so much better.
Yeah. So that's.
And the property we're at now, we said, hey, we really want to focus on like introducing different grasses, introducing clover, getting deeper roots in the soil.
Yeah.
And I've noticed a difference this year big time versus September when we got here last year. Like the soil was kind of ripping away a little bit easier.
Yeah. I mean,
granted, we're in this crazy drought right now.
And I also think people need to think about like, how much lawn do you need?
Lawn is stupid. It's green desert.
Well, do you
it's
know
bullshit.
What lawn is? Lawn is
ego.
Yeah, exactly. Do you know lawn is like it's a byproduct of colonization? So these
preach
like
it, girl.
Rich people would
take a bow.
Thank you. these rich people would just have lawns because they wanted to just show off how much space they could waste. Wait, that they didn't have to turn it into farms, that they could just sit in their house and have all opulence. Of this land that they were Great just word. Wasting. And now we think
we wanted to imitate those people.
It gives me goosebumps. It's so
it's the greatest
goosebumps. Goosebumps. It's just gross. Yeah, I'm like into it. Like, let's.
You're just pumped up.
But like, how much lawn do we need?
Well, I do. I did appreciate Zero. Watching. There was, I think it was Poland. It was a beekeeping. Was that the Queen of the Sun? Queen of the Sun documentary.
That was a while ago. Yeah, really that was long. Good.
That was like before we started beekeeping. We watched it, and I was like, I really want to beekeep. But I think it was that one. They talked to somebody in Poland that was like, "Yeah, you Americans and your lawns. Like, we think lawns are dumb here.
They are.
Like,
it's you the greatest should
have vegetables.
Ever you should
have,
told."
Well, and our friend, yeah. our friend, he's a beekeeper. His parents, they're awesome. The mom's an herbalist. Mm. And I went to their house the other day, drop off beeswax.
And, oh, shout out Nate Rose.
Yeah.
And the Giving Bee Project. You should check it out. The Giving Bee Project. I think it's like thegivingbeeproject.com.
And
he does some really cool stuff. Check it out. Just go check out the website.
So we were just like their front yard. Their whole front yard is a garden. And it's wild. You know what I mean? Like, it's not. Yeah. And so we were standing there.
I look at it. I'm like, that is gorgeous.
Just, yeah.
It's beautiful.
And they got hit by Hurricane Ida. So they were just back. And there were no trees. So we were just like, I was like a little bit re-traumatized. Like, oh my God, like there's nothing here. So we were just talking about that. And I said, well, your front yard still looks amazing. And she said, yeah, our neighbors hate it. And I was like, who cares about it? She was like, yeah, I don't care about them. Like, it doesn't matter. But they're growing vegetables in all of these wildflowers and that's what we should be doing. Or like, I just drive by people's houses and I'm like, it's just wasted. And all
Green
you have
desert.
To
do
and
There's
the thing
so
is
much.
Is all you have to do is stop cutting your grass and it will grow, and a forest will eventually grow, a meadow will grow, and then trees will grow. It just,
there's methods that you can kind of introduce more native species, and you do have to do a little bit of tarping and then introduce a few things to just stop the spread of some of the non-native BS, or eventually some trees will start growing.
Trees
it's a
just
bunch of non-native
grow.
Stuff. That's yeah. all yeah. it is. It's just non-native
I know.
Grasses.
A lot
it's
of
just
it.
Dumb.
Yeah.
There's like two native grasses.
Right.
Like really when I was buying grass seed, I was going like, oh, it's so depressing. Like none of it's native.
What's so funny. I forget where I was at a garden center the other day, and it was like, we're so sorry. The price of grass seed has skyrocketed, and it's like $50 a pound now.
Darn.
Like, yeah, it was like, what in the world is going on? That grass seed, like, and non-native, like, just invasive species, essentially, yeah. Just like.
Just turf.
Yeah.
And most native grasses are tall grasses.
Beautiful.
Yeah, they're not long grasses. Right?
Yeah. Gosh, and grass like there's so ordinances. Nice. So a lot of people can't even do this because they're going to get fined. And it's just.
You can't
spread
those
backwards.
Seeds.
Yeah. It's backwards. Dangerous.
Yeah. I can tell. So, all right. This goes back a little bit. Later season honey tends to be darker and tends to be more nutritious. The darker the honey, the more nutritious it is. There's more enzymes. And I have a theory that the reason for that is that the later season plants that are contributing the nectar for that later season honey, their root structures are so much deeper in the soil and they're getting so many more layers of nutrients than say the plant that's able just to pop up in the spring and, you know, has a shallow root system. It hasn't had a long time to just dig its feet in. Mm-hmm. So you're getting just, you know, not quite as in depth of nectar, and that just translated what you were talking about, something with just like the deeper those roots go, the more nutrition is coming out.
Exactly.
But I think it's really interesting to see that is also translating into more nutritious honey.
Yeah.
Like what?
Yeah. Wow. I mean, you think like, and that's why I like and not even just regenerate, but just like holistic management really of land, you know, like allows for these deeper root systems to form. So like as these, you know, they're bringing up, you know, greater new amount of nutrition, but like then the soil can then retain a lot more moisture, so like they're more drought resistant. So like when you farm in a regenerative way, or like you treat your if you treat your lawn in a regenerative way or a holistic way, you're plants in your lawn is drought resistant, you know, so it can hold on to so much moisture so that like
organic matter holds on to that moisture.
It's all this humus. It's like broken down organic matter. So it's just like, it's rich and spongy and it's holding.
Call that hummus for a very long time. Humus.
So it's just like the organic layer of like broken down soil. So it's like this just like rich, just
it's deep that stuff you want to get your hands in.
Exactly. Yeah. It's super decomposed matter, you know? So like, the more humus you accumulate over time, the more organic matter you accumulate over time, the better your plants are at resisting these droughts. So like, you don't even have to worry that like, oh man, it hasn't rained a little bit. It's like, that's fine. There's so much water down in the soil so that like, and going back, tying this into beekeeping, if your plants are that healthy, they're going to flower and your bees are going to have so much access to pollen.
And then they spread more, they pollinate more.
Exactly.
It's a
beautiful cycle.
You told us that you don't think that there's nearly as many bees at your farm this year.
I did notice that. I just more recently have seen a lot more just because I don't know where I was, but I did when we first got, I remember it so vividly.
So our hives previously were about 700 yards as the crow flies from
Everwild Farm.
Yeah. Just and like then if you could walk through all the trees.
And then we obviously had to move from that property and we left zero bees. So there was probably about 1 million bees at a peak time in our yard. Yeah. They were feasting on Everwild.
Oh my God. I remember like we planted this one whole plot. It was like, oh man, I can't remember like the square footage, but it was a huge area and we had just like, it was just when we first started. So we had tilled it up cause it was just all grass. You know, it was like, there was a farm that had been there before us, like, as you guys know. And, but it had gotten so overgrown that we're like, we don't even know what's in here anymore. So let's start over. Let's start fresh. We planted so much buckwheat. We just planted
I told people we were getting buckwheat and they were like, you are not our getting buckwheat, honey.
It was so, and I was like, dark.
Yes, we are.
It was a huge plot of buckwheat. Isn't that so funny?
That's amazing. We had people tell us there's no way you're getting buckwheat.
And I was like, we are.
Humongous field of buckwheat.
Taste this honey. And look how dark it is. It was like beyond goldenrod.
Yeah.
Japanese knotweed but buckwheat.
Crazy how many bees were in there. I remember it was like the first season we're farming, and I'm just walking down there, and I literally am crying. It was so beautiful. There were so many bees and so many insects pollinating everywhere, and you could just hear and feel the vibration.
People said it was insane.
It was out of control.
Well, and that that's cool.
Yeah. It was so cool.
That also goes to the fact, and we've said it before, that really planting plants that bloom in different seasons is so important. Like this dearth that we've been talking about, looking up different plants that bloom in your specific area.
Yeah.
During July and August and like, you know, September, October, I guess.
For sure.
Yeah. And that's like so important to really have that in mind when you're planting.
Well, there's also like, when you're planting, because like you might not have access to like the native flowers that it just like naturally bloom that way.
Right.
You can focus on spreading more of those seeds those native flowers that bloom.
That's something that
You don't hear like goldenrod seed.
I know.
I think
you gotta start harvesting it off. That's what I've been wanting to do this year.
Milkweed and everything. We'll just shake the seed pods and just run around.
I'll take the milkweed pods and just like grab a clump and just sprinkle a little here.
And talk about beautiful. Like they're so fluffy and beautiful. Oh my God, milkweed. Yeah. That's something so easy that we do that like in these last two properties that we've lived at, we get there and we buy native seeds and we just go and
don't necessarily know if it works.
Throw them everywhere.
And then all of a sudden we're like, look at these natives.
Yeah, and there's like cool stuff that pops up. I think that's just, and it doesn't have to be intimidating.
Going back to that kind of fake real honey I was mentioning.
When
you're dehumidifying down, and I don't think the chemical reactions are occurring that create that really what I call honey.
Mm-hmm.
Synthetic fertilizers.
Yeah.
So are they contributing to nutritional value? Or are they just grow? I feel like a lot of times you can make something grow.
Mm-hmm.
You can make it big and you can make it beautiful.
Right.
But I don't know if the nutritional value is translating into it mm-hmm. or if it's just appearance wise.
So you're talking about like Miracle Grow is what you're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, that's totally a good the commercial example for sure.
Yeah. But like, I mean, I don't even know what they call it on like such a large scale or anything. But like, it was, oh man, it just like goes back so far, like back to like World War II, you know, and like even before that, but like what was happening, what they used, like, so like the industrial food revolution. Yeah. Yeah. But so like what happened was like in, yeah, right. That too. But like what the chemicals that they were using in like,
oh, you're talking
like
about
concentration camps, yes. You know, in World War II, Agent in Germany. Orange. Exactly. And then they used in the Korean War.
Became Roundup.
Or not Korean War, in the Vietnam War, yeah. And it's like, it became Roundup. But it was also like, yeah. They then had, because they now had this like herbicide, they just created this like industrialized system of, and it was like, they already had the machinery that they were yes. pumping out because they just were in a big war. So like, might as well use it for something better.
So create its use.
But yeah, so.
That's
like,
some deep. Yo, we could go down some.
There are some good documentaries. So you have.
I don't want to get demonetized. Yeah, yeah. Oh wait, we're not monetized.
Sponsored by Forest and Main and Brewing.
We're sponsored by Carajo Skincare and Bee Farm.
Holler! And so, this episode is brought to you by Everwild Farms.
It's just farm.
We're Everwild Farm.
Nice.
In that
bringing
talk,
the flavor back to your plate.
Regenerative your taste buds.
In that talk that you gave.
Regenerate.
Well, you know.
That's good. You should use that. It'll give you a tagline. In that talk that you gave, you had like a whole slide of suggestive like videos and readings.
Yeah.
Maybe we could get like that picture
that
or something.
Yeah.
Or just we can throw that in like
I
a
just
post.
Like, I mean, yeah, I just have like
that's
a little.
That's what I'm saying. Put it in a post.
Yeah, 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 totally.
Because I thought that you were like, take a screenshot of this and watch
just
this
stuff.
Just
look at it because it's like, yeah, it's like Kiss the Ground is like this one documentary that's like such a major.
Kiss the Ground?
Kiss the Ground.
Like that name? Okay. Like that name?
It's like it really helps.
Hug a tree?
Hug a tree. It really helps Kiss you hug a tree. Kiss the Ground. Yeah, yeah. So it really helps you just like get a basic understanding about what the tools are okay. of regenerative farming.
Great.
Yeah, so that's a really good one. But yeah, well, yeah, definitely, I'll send that over.
Yeah, I think that's good.
Going back to that is like, well, yeah, it just like made me, it really sparked that thought about like people who are using like non-natural ways to get to like, to achieve honey. You know, you're getting to honey. So it's like, that just like spurred thought is like, you're using fertilizers that are not natural, they're synthetic, so they were, you know, chemically, they were created in a lab,
they're imitating something,
yeah,
and imitation is never as good as the original,
exactly,
and
most of the time it's nitrogen, because like that's the most readily used.
I feel like it's always nitrogen,
it's always, because it's the most readily used element by plants. So it's the nutrient that they use. It's like nitrogen is in the highest thing. It's like it's like in a chlorophyll molecule, you know, when you're breaking going down to the chemistry.
More like borophyll.
That had to come back around to that too. Boron. But yeah, so like the basic structure is like has magnesium and then it has like nitrogen molecules all attached to each other, so they're all like in this like beautiful building block. What's really cool though actually is, oh my god, I love, I'm such a nerd, but like, so a blood cell, the main building block of blood cell is iron, and it's almost identical to a chlorophyll molecule.
I love the crossovers.
Oh my god,
human, it's plant, like, animal,
yeah. It's so cool.
Yeah. Oh, we're closer to fungus, sorry. Fungi, we're closer to mushrooms than we are to, yeah, it's,
yeah, I digress, but anyway, so nitrogen is the most readily used nutrient by plants. So, like in this industrial fertilizer era that we exist in and have existed in since post World War II, the idea was that they're just pumping the ground full of nitrogen and other nutrients that they need, but like to keep the ground like looking green. So it's just like the nutrients are there; they're giving it. But it's like, think about it; it's like a liquid IV drip of nutrients, and that you're just giving it what it needs and nothing else, you know. So like when you have like a natural uptake of these nutrients, it doesn't necessarily happen as quickly.
That's like skincare, dude.
Well, also I'm wondering, as soon as you get off the IV, there's nothing there.
Exactly. It's, the soil, it's gone. Dead. It's yeah. dead.
Kara, you talk about it all the time. Your skincare products, our skincare products.
Sponsoring. Let's talk about it.
Kara Jo Skincare. You're like the rejuvenating facial serum.
Like,
it lets your skin balance its oil production, and it doesn't replace the oil production of your skin, because we all have been addicted to lip balm, right? Like, we've all been like, oh man, I can't stop using lip balm, because your lips go, oh, you want to keep putting this on? I'm going to stop producing oil.
Right.
The soil's like, oh, you're just going to keep putting this in me? I don't need to make this. I don't need to hold this. I don't need anything. I'm dead. Done.
It's the same thing with skincare, as like you can wash your face and it's a surfactant and it'll take off oil, but you're not. With natural skincare of sorts, you're actually helping cell renewal, helping cell repair, kind of that whole kind of thing. That's good.
Yeah.
Did you want to say something? Oh,
I was just going to say, I think going into your pitch of regenerative agriculture, it's using nature, like aiding in nature. Mm-hmm. So you're like using things from nature to help to like aid the health of the plants, basically.
Right.
So instead of just like giving them something, like one element that they need, you're like allowing them to flourish by like
supporting them. Yeah,
exactly. And support. I think Biggest Little Farm, like that was another resource that you used there. Biggest Little Farm like shows this well, where they have one issue on the farm and then they like introduce, you know, geese to eat all the snails that are eating their peaches or whatever it was. I think that's,
but
yeah, support rather than replace.
Right. Totally.
But like what you're saying about like, you know, is there any difference in nutrition? It's just like, you think about like synthetic fertilizing is like taking steroids, you know? So like, you're not actually building muscle. Like you just took a steroid that just like boosted your body up. So like these fertilizers are like so highly concentrated in like, so.
Wait, when people take steroids, they're not actually building muscle?
That's what I thought it was. Like, it's like boosting. It's like, do not quote me on this, but like, that's what I always thought. It was like, it's like, the way that it's like helping you form, like build muscle, or like build those muscles, is it's like giving your body like this, like excessive boost of chemicals to like get you to be more muscular looking. But it's not like an actual like healthy muscle. Right. Like, you're not actually like having healthy muscles.
Well, yeah,
that makes sense.
So that's what I thought. Like, and the same thing, like with like and treating like chickens and stuff like that. They treat
die.
Them, like, yeah, exactly. So it's like the same thing with like treating a chicken, is like you pump it with steroids so it gets beefy and big, it's and like, then it's like, yeah, but that's not healthy meat.
It doesn't. It has an end.
Yeah, exactly. So like the same thing with soil is like, if you just pump it full of these like high amounts of nutrients, you're like overloading the soil so that it has all of these things. Right away, it has no, it doesn't actually have to like develop, you know, its regular functions. All these like physiological functions of the plant do not have to properly operate.
Do you spray a lot of fertilizer on, do they absorb, do you at the farm, or is there a lot of fertilizer absorption through the leaves of plants?
I was just gonna be like, both. Leaves, tomato leaves,
both. Yeah, foliar fertilizing can, because like leaves, just like your skin, has pores, you know, so they open and close, you know, depending on the time of the day and the temperature and things like that. So you can spray, you know, like we spray fish fertilizer on certain plants to give them, you know, more nutrients.
That's
like
direct shot into the plant, into the soil.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
But it's just like, if it needs just that's a more easily uptakeable thing. And it's especially like nitrogen, like when you can spray like fish, because like fish emulsion will like give it a nitrogen boost, because nitrogen is so readily used and it's used, being used so fast. Like
they
need it. Yeah. So it's like, it's just a shot. So it's to keep it going. But it also like that for some reason, from what we have seen in our farm, is like that ends up lasting a lot of like a long time in the plants. Like once we spray these fish emulsions, like it will keep the nitrogen level in the plant higher, but like most of it is using the soil. Like we'll have a, you know, we'll put, you know, feather meal or bone meal mixed in with our already like our base fertilizer that we use, which is just like biochar, and you know, it's different types of like feather meal, blood meal, bone meal, kelp meal, all these like different types of ground up nutrients.
So this kind of also reminds me of just like another analogy is if you help a butterfly out of the cocoon, it won't be able to fly as well, because the struggle out of the cocoon, it also made me think of that bee emerging today, like had some struggle, right?
Right.
That the struggle, it's not the same with the struggle, but like the struggle helps the insect and the butterfly be like strengthen its wings,
right,
so that it can fly on its own. You're not just like interrupting nature, mm, and being like, no, 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 let me just help you out. Like,
there was actually
the support. Again, it goes back to the support rather than like this egocentric thing that humans even have any idea what's going on.
Well, the National Monarch Society, or one of, I made that up, but it might be the right term, the right name.
Like the sound,
but they said like, stop bringing monarch egg sacs in, stop bringing the sacs inside, stop doing it all like in your little net casings. Let it happen in nature, because unfortunately,
survival of the fittest,
you're introducing
really
weaker monarchs, and it's not, we don't think it is actually helping. And it's interesting, but people are like, look how my beautiful monarchs, and you're like, ah, if you dug a little deeper on that, I think you maybe would go like, we shouldn't do this,
right.
But and it, I
but
was
it's
gonna
also
say,
not hurting anybody, and yeah, getting people,
I think,
connected.
It's so interesting, plants that have experienced hardship,
mm,
are so much better in the long run, and
hardening
and, oh, yeah, like just, you know, they need to have wind. They need to have some conditions that make them dig their roots deeper and need to get a beefier stalk to be able to handle it. And talk about like a direct correlation to humans. Like, come on, mm-hmm, people that have a little bit of hardship in their life, I think they have the ability to...
With good therapy.
Yeah, no shit, right?
Perfect.
But they have the ability to fly.
Sponsored better help. Over 26,000 therapists.
You listen to some podcast.
I also,
but that's, it's so interesting. Like, really, like we talked about too. Like, you can't imitate the sun. Like,
right,
as many lights with different spectrums and LED and blah 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 blah. The sun owns those lights.
Right.
So let nature do it.
Yeah.
Support nature and let nature,
exactly,
do it. And that's regenerative farming.
Boom.
And God, if we can just translate that into our lives a little bit in ways,
right,
we're better off.
That's such a good ending.
We're in this ecosystem. We're a part of that circle.
Mm.
So compost. So
exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
I mean, how are we putting it back?
Well, and also, like, you wrapped it up very nicely, but one thing that I really got from like hanging out with you guys this summer, uh-huh, was the Penn State soil testing, or
testing. Just soil testing in general.
So just... Just talk a little bit about soil testing.
Yeah.
Because this is something, if you do want to go from raised beds to ground, like, mm-hmm, I think this is really important.
Hmm. So, like, testing your, soil testing and water testing too, actually. Because, like, you know, you could have, like, high amounts of lead in your soil.
And
in
we
your
have
water.
Crazy amounts of magnesium in the soil in the water.
Yeah.
And, like,
so, like, understanding those things. But, like, so testing your soil, like, even in a raised bed, even if you have a garden bed, a box or anything, like, and it's been around for years, you know, and years and years.
Especially,
and years.
Probably even if it's been around for years.
Yeah, yeah. Like, to test it, and like, Penn State is like a $9 soils, like, soil test. And you can get, obviously, like, extra added bonuses to it. It's like, oh, organic matter test.
$9 and you like send a bag of
you
soil.
You send a little baggie and you write on the label, like, it's just a Ziploc bag. You take like a soil sample, like a cup of soil, and you know, go on Penn State Extension website, type in Penn State soils test or wherever your local state extension.
Google it. Yeah,
exactly. And you send them a little like cup of soil. You dry it out. You send it to them, and you just mail it at the post office.
Although I guess anybody could send theirs to Penn State.
You could. Penn State's cool. Penn State's got a good ag program, so I would definitely recommend it.
And then,
brought to you by Penn State Extension.
And then what I also think is interesting. Well, so Everwild Farm is 1 acre, right? Is it 1 acre?
2 acres in total, but we only are like 1-ish acre under actual cultivation.
Okay. And you sent different plots.
Yeah, yeah.
And all the different plots came back different.
Oh, yeah. So we have 9 plots. 10, maybe? 9? I think 9 plots total. And so we took samples, and when you take your sample, you take like we have this little like probe that we stick into the ground, and it brings out like a little like turd
core
of soil.
Sample. Yeah, yeah, totally. I know exactly. Yeah.
And so we like mixed all these together.
How deep?
Maybe. I mean, the we have this thing, and it probably goes in about like 6-ish inches.
Yeah. Oh, that makes sense to me.
And
it's
then,
not the top. It's not the crazy bottom.
Exactly. So like, and then you just like combine all of these soil samples together, and you take like, you know, a little like funny little grid of just soil sand, like a little like probe of your one plot at a time. And we just take a bunch and then we add them together. We send that off and we're like, okay, plot one, what is the breakdown? Oh, wow, we're really low in sulfur. We're really low in salts. Oh, we're exceptionally high in zinc and copper. Like all of these micronutrients that you don't even necessarily think about. Like, oh, what? I didn't even know plants needed zinc.
But you could probably transfer that back to we grew butternut squash in this area, and butternut squash takes a bunch of this in order
exactly.
to... Yeah,
right. Because all different
crop rotation.
Boom. Yeah,
it's really nutrient rotation.
Yeah, yeah.
Or totally. Nutrient amendment.
Yep.
By rotation.
And so the beauty, so that's why like we just have to like keep good records about like, oh, what was here last year? Oh, broccoli. Oh, brassicas. Ooh, they are really heavy feeders. Broccoli eats a lot of nutrients up. So like we have to continue to add more nutrients up to it. But that was last year. So what is low here? You know, okay. Lettuce does not need a lot of nutrients. They just need a lot of nitrogen. Let's put that here. We can move that way. But like,
which makes sense because lettuce doesn't provide a lot of nutrients.
Exactly. It's light, you know.
Would you look
water.
At that?
But not if you grow regeneratively. Packed.
Hell yeah.
No.
Your guys, tasty.
Your guys' greens are really robust in flavor, though. They are. I mean,
that's what I'm saying.
I love that you put the like some more bittering greens in your mixes,
some
especially
mustards.
In the dude. Your spring mixes were rad.
Boom.
But they were like hearty.
Yeah, exactly.
That was cool.
Thick. But yeah, so it's like nice to be able to like, because we tested so like extensively in the springtime, and we're going to do another test. So going into the later, like mid fall to wintertime, we'll know how to amend, like what we need to amend for.
And then see if it works in the spring.
Exactly. And then see if we need anything. But like, yeah, it was really important to like understand what nutrients are lacking in certain areas. And yeah, they come back, like Kara was saying. Each plot is so unique and so different because, going back to like erosion, like sometimes water just really runs through this plot and it just takes the nutrients away. Or, you know, this plot is brand new. Plot five, we just opened up this year. So it's really low. And we know it's really low in all of these nutrients because we didn't compost it because we didn't have access to compost, you know, for a little bit. But all of the other plots have been composted over and over again, whatever it may be. So just to get like such a, you know, so if you're in a garden, you know, like, yeah, test your soil, check it out.
And I
like,
think, yeah. And I think that's not... important also because, okay, let's say you want to plant garlic.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you test your soil and you know you want to plant garlic
and
here.
You know garlic crushes phosphorus.
Yes, right. You can do different kinds of things. And
you
there are people, we just learned, like, you can even send it to, there's people, like even
companies,
Amish people.
Yeah.
That you can send it to them and they'll make concoctions. Like, you know, you guys are, Tim's like a wizard and has all
he's
of
like
this information.
He's like an
alchemist.
Yeah. So it's like,
so
I don't
good.
Even have, like I sit there and I listen to him talk and it's fascinating, but I'm like, okay, but how am I going to do this?
Right.
You know?
And this all sounds like a lot, but I think if you get your soil tested, you get the results.
Chickens
are freaking out.
Are they good?
I don't know.
Oh, I bet you they're just all coming together at night and then they get scared.
Yeah, we hear chickens.
Haley and I are like, oh my God.
I thought it was little children at first. I heard like,
I think they're good.
Yeah,
I
they're
think
fine.
They're
just
good. This is normal nighttime, but we're concerned.
But if you get your soil tested, you get the results back and then you can start learning a little bit more and you can piece by piece go, okay, this is what I should use.
Yeah,
so, all right,
little
so a couple things I learned. Soil testing is big. We touched on it at the very end, but that's totally something if you want to take your garden to the next level.
Totally.
It's like $9 or 10, you know,
I mean,
it's very
at the bare minimum, and that just gives you such a, you know, a basic understanding, a very basic understanding, and that's fine.
Which is good to start.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Especially if you're just dipping your toe in the water, whatever it is.
Tapping, dipping,
tipping
and tapping.
Tipping the toes, the teeth.
Feed the soil. You feed the soil. You want the you want to feed the soil. You want to create organic matter in that soil.
And like one of the
and
things,
then the soil can do the work.
Yeah.
And I think just like leaving the roots in the base of the plant in the soil. That's
so many
something.
People rip up the plant.
Yeah.
I've
we
done
always
it a thousand
did.
Times.
Yeah.
Cut it at the base. Leave those roots in.
I mean,
that's
the
organic
only,
matter.
The only reason I would ever take we ever take the roots out is that like if it's such a thick root system and we can't move it over or like something happened where like the soil like it. Rained a lot or like we have really thick clay soil,
right?
So it doesn't always work where we can just move the root system over, like say like a fennel plant, and fennels have this like really thick
root. I did fennels the other day. Yeah. I was like, I couldn't even rip them up.
Yeah, wow. Exactly. Yeah. They're just such a thick stalk and their root system is so strong that you have to use like a tool to take it out. But like, so leave like what the idea is that like, we'll leave it in as long as possible. And then when we're ready to plant in, if you put a new transplant in, you're just giving it new roots right away. So it's like, it has food. You take that food away, you just put more food right back in immediately. Yeah. So like if you leave it in as long as possible, and then you can just replenish that food, you know.
So good.
Yeah.
It's simple.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Check out some cover crops. A great thing to plant late
depending on how
fall.
Much space you got,
And you even said like some cover crops can be like pollinator friendly.
Oh yeah,
I mean, buckwheat's the great example of that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, totally. I mean, every cover crop will go to flower. You know, every plant flowers. So like you can let it, you know, so as long as you let it go, it just like depends on, you have to, if you're going to cover crop and you have a lot of space and you're like a homesteader or anything and you're trying to plant on like a quarter acre or even a little bit less, like, you just got to be careful because, like, if you let it go to, you know, if you let it fly, you're like, I'm just going to keep going. It's beautiful. It goes to seed, and all of a sudden,
and
it's a weed.
And then you got
to
get the weeders out there.
Or then you got to tarp.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and tarping is great. Like we were saying, but it's a great method that we use regularly, but I also just hate the use of plastic no matter what. But it's so effective, and that's why
plastic
is great.
And you can you get the thick stuff, you can reuse it.
Totally.
You know, we made a mistake of buying thinner tarping, and then it starts disintegrating. Boom. So, you know, we learned that lesson.
The last thing you want,
UV treated.
Again, I think
UV treated is a good keyword to look for. UV treated.
Yeah, things are UV treated. Or like a silage tarp has like, you know, it's like a black and white sided tarp is what we use. And that's like, I don't know, like, what exactly to look for, but yeah, you have something that's UV, to be like UV treated plastic will allow it to not break down
in the sun.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was cool. I think that was
that
a good
was
talk.
Cool. Yeah, I'm
interested.
Yeah, I love it.
Okay, cool. Nice. This is cool. I like.
Sorry
this.
To Haley that we didn't have the fourth microphone.
I know. We'll no someday problem. Upgrade. I'm glad that you interjected though. That was like good.
It was a good listen.
And we're excited right now because Haley brought over her little uni pizza maker John, and Kara Jo started making dough yesterday. So we're about to have a little pizza party.
Yeah. Pizza party time.
Pizza party.
But I just want to thank the audience out there for all of everything. The audience.
You guys are great.
You
thank
guys were
you.
So great. You were so quiet. You were so quiet. Calm down. You're so quiet for most of the episode.
Respectful.
So we appreciate that.
So kind.
And thanks for listening. I say it every time. If you got this far, which, man, good for you, but you're a rock star.
This is great. This is fun.
Everwild
Farm.
Entertaining. Everwild Farm.
Farm. One of them.
For now,
we appreciate that Kara Jo's Skincare and Bee Farm and Mind Your Hives is in your circle and your orbit, and we interact and you guys grow things that we use, and Kara interned and learned so much, so we super appreciate our relationship that we have with you guys. It's really special and we really like it. Thank you everybody. Till next time.
Yeah, happy farming, happy regeneration, people.
Happy gardening, fall time, plant some stuff.
Peace out. I'm gonna make that a little louder. Holler.